Welcome to everyone watching on the live stream at October2011.org. I'm Pete Tucker. I report locally here in D.C. at thefightback.org. And we're going to be talking about the council member for the occupiers. Their council member is Ward 2 council member Jack Evans, who has a very interesting situation. In addition to making $125,000 a year on the payroll for his government salary, he also makes an additional $240,000 a year on the payroll of Patton Boggs. And joining me is John Hanrahan. He's a Washington, D.C. writer, a former executive director of the Fund for Investigative Journalism, and a former reporter for the Washington Post, the Washington Star, UPI, and other news organizations. Until recently a legal investigator, Hanrahan is the author of two books, Lost Frontier, The Marketing of Alaska, and Government by Contract. He's now on special assignment for Nieman Watchdog, and you can find his reports at NiemanWatchdog.org. Welcome, John Hanrahan.
Thanks very much. Good to be here. Thanks.
So first, let's start with your thoughts on these occupations, which began September 17th in New York with Occupy Wall Street and have touched a nerve, and you've seen them spread out all over the place, including two here in D.C. and right here at Freedom Plaza, which began, I should say, October 6th, when they camped out here that evening. It was the last day of the first decade of the war in Afghanistan. When they woke up, it was the beginning of the second decade of the war in Afghanistan.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's from somebody who's as old as I am, and it's incredible the outpouring of people across the country, first of all in New York and then here. And it's an interesting situation because there have been a lot of demonstrations that have been around the country that the news media was ignoring for years. I mean, people rallying on Wall Street, and people rallying in Chicago, people rallying in D.C. and in other cities, and the news media sort of ignored it. It might get some local coverage, but often not. And what was different here, I think, in New York, is that before it was always one-day demonstrations. It's easy for the news media to blow off. A lot of people who support demonstrations said, you know, we've got to do more than that, and so people were doing more than that. But this notion of occupying a space and of staying there resonated with the media, and at first in a very put-down, insulting kind of manner, now in a much more respectful manner. And as I said, I've seen nothing to compare with this, dating back to the Vietnam War protests, when there was a great amount of there was support, but also a great amount of hostility toward demonstrators. And here in D.C. we've seen it. We've seen it in New York also by the polls up there that people are support these, that people from all walks of life, people who are unemployed, people who are blue-collar workers, people who are white-collar workers, and many have lost their jobs, many fear they will lose their jobs. And it's been it's just been very inspiring to a lot of us who had sort of said, well, I guess maybe people just don't care enough to really put themselves on the line. It's still obviously a nationwide. It's growing. A lot of them have been disrupted by police raids. Close them down. They pop up again, and I think that's going to continue. I think it's really struck a spark here in D.C. Just going between here at Freedom Plaza and McPherson Square. A person could get a good education just talking to people about different issues. And in addition to that, both of them have featured some really interesting speakers who have a lot to say. They both have done some really good actions that I think a lot of people need that sort of visible presence in order to connect. I mean, I think a lot of people say, I don't read about it in my local paper, and a lot of people still aren't that internet savvy, and so they depend on the papers. They say, well, I didn't see it in the Washington Post or the New York Times or the, you know, Los Angeles Times or the Chicago Tribune, and yet things were happening. the news media just didn't pay attention. What's also interesting here, I think, and nationwide, is at least at this point, I mean, I recognize this can change in a minute, that the initial stories here and in New York and every place else were always, there was talk about, well, these oddball, you know, would-be hippies, et cetera, et cetera. And then when the reporters had to take a closer look at it, they said, oh, that isn't the case. I mean, even the mainstream reporters. And you had, though, I'm talking about mainstream here, but then on the alternative and foreign press was all over this story from the beginning. And certainly Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, and then all sorts of online sites and bloggers where you could get the story just by, and then here we have live streaming here and live streaming in New York. And sometimes I'd look at the one in New York and there'd be thousands of people watching it, and sometimes nothing was going on. You know, I mean, just people just sort of milling around or eating or something, but people were sort of leaning on what was being said and done there. So it's a very hopeful thing, and I also think it's such a wise thing to keep keep this partisan politics out of it, so that the media, some of them tried to typecast it as this is the left wing version of the Tea Party, and they're going to be out there for Obama, and they couldn't be more wrong. And I think they came to realize that as they at this point. But as I said, it could all change in a day. They would, the stories of neighbors are unhappy with this or that demonstration. It's unsafe. You know, any pretext they could, the police, or I actually should say, in most cases, their civilian mayor, their civilian bosses, the mayors seem to be calling the shots on when they go into places, as in happened in Oakland in the last 2 days. So I've rambled on too long on that point. I don't know if that covers some of what you were asking me, but it's just a very, very hopeful, inspiring sign. And I think it also, because of the participation of so many young people, it gives sort of the lie to that notion that young people today are just not, you know, they're all busy texting and tweeting and Facebooking, and I think we've seen that is far from the case.
And John Hanrahan, both of the occupations in D.C. here at Freedom Plaza and at McPherson Square are in Ward 2. Mm-hmm. You have lived in Ward 2 for some time. You've done a series of pieces on the council member for Ward 2, and for folks who not from D.C. It's important to point out that D.C. is not a state, and so there's no governor, there's no two senators. Maybe D.C. is not yet a state. It should be. Since there's no governor, no two senators, the mayor is the highest elected official. Now, there is a delegate to the House of Representatives, Eleanor Holmes Norton, a non-voting member of the House. The mayor is the highest elected official. The chair of the council may be the second highest elected official, and then Jack Evans is potentially the third most powerful elected official in D.C. as chair of the Finance and Revenue Committee. But talk a bit about him, your council member, as well as mm-hmm. the council member for both of these occupations in D.C.
Yeah, he's Jack Evans has been a council member from Ward 2 for 20 years now. And to add to what you just said, there's only 13 members on the D.C. council. So essentially, if you can get a majority of that council and a mayor on your side, that's all it takes. And Evans, it actually is his record as chairman of the Finance and Revenue Committee somewhat ties into the theme of what these protests are about, as far as his orientation is. Although he represents people here in the ward, he seems to represent the corporations more. I don't think he's seen a tax break he didn't like for some big corporation, whether it's for building a baseball stadium, to the issue I'm going to talk about here in a minute, a convention center hotel for the Marriott Corporation. Hardly a company that's suffering financially, yet there's public financing to the tune of $270 million that Jack Evans arranged. And before I get into that, I'm probably digressing too much here, but one of the things that you do find that issues like public financing for a baseball stadium or tax handouts to big corporations are one of those issues that do unite people left and right and center. When there was a fight over the baseball stadium, which Evans was championing, a $700 million public financing, people from the left, or more or less left, you know, like Friends of the Earth, to people, to the Heritage Foundation, Cato Institute, all sorts of citizens, and the Green Party in between, or on the left in the case of the Green Party. So Evans has been, as a history of handouts to big corporations, the one that I've been following most closely for now the last 2 years is just to try to get him to comply with the conflict of interest reporting laws, laws that are on the book in the city. And to start out just in the simplest way, the law says if a council member recuses himself from voting on any matter, he shall then submit a written statement explaining his recusal. And the statement is to go to the council chairman, the Board of Elections and Ethics, and to the Office of Campaign Finance. It's very simple. Recuse yourself, write a statement explaining the recusal. Regarding the this public financing for the Marriott Hotel, Convention Center Hotel, he has not filed such a statement. 2 years ago, in June and July of 2009, he recused himself suddenly on this project. He had been the lead architect of the legislation to get public financing for Marriott. Suddenly, on the verge of carrying the ball across the goal line, he lets somebody else carry it across. He recuses himself. The legislation passes. He recuses himself on five occasions in committee meetings and in council, full council meetings. And the Washington Examiner, the local right-wing paper, has a which has some good local reporting from time to time, had a story in which in the last paragraph it said Evans recused himself because his law firm, Patton Boggs, represents the Marriott Corporation. Now, as Pete mentioned at the outset, council members are allowed to have outside employment other than the chairman. Evans has this $240,000 payment from Patton Boggs, which, again, in case people aren't familiar with it, it is one of the premier, if not the premier, lobbying, K Street lobbying firm in town. I don't know if they're actually physically on K Street these days or not, but they are the biggest lobbying firm. They represent a whole ton of big clients, and most of them not ones that a lot of us would be too happy to be in the same room with. Evans, he recused himself, the legislation passes. And recusal to me and to the legal community means you dissociate yourself from that issue from that time forward. Suddenly the deal runs into a little bit of a snag, a complicated legal snag. Marriott has some legal problems that with another company. I won't go into all the details of that, but it affects the deal. It affects Marriott's ability to go forward with the deal. So Jack Evans, the man who has recused himself, suddenly puts himself back in the deal, as the Washington Post and Washington Business Journal describe, that he works behind the scenes to unsnarl this this problem. And he does. He's successful. He and the former attorney general get the deal back on track again. In that, when he first recused himself, the back in June and July of 2009, the Committee of 100 and the Federation of Citizens Associations, two strong citizens organizations in town, sent letters to him and to the then chairman, Vincent Gray, to asking, what's this all about? When did his law firm start representing Marriott? If they in fact did, I always accept the possibility that the reporter had it wrong. But he did recuse himself. There's obviously some party, Marriott or someone else, where he felt that he had some sort of a potential conflict. I give him credit for recusing himself. It's the after that, though, he has refused to fill out the paperwork that explains his recusal. And they just blew off the two citizens associations. So about a year later, I finally decided to pursue this more on my own and began sending letters, FOIA requests, to see if he had submitted this written statement, and he hadn't to any of to the Board of Elections or the Office of Campaign Finance or to his or to the chairman of the council. I wrote first Vincent Gray, and then when he left office, I've had 5 letters now to Kwame Brown, the latest of which I just sent today. Kwame Brown back in March responded to my 3rd letter saying, I will look into the matter. I've heard nothing from him, and I've also, of course, sent this to Councilmember Evans, who I didn't expect to hear anything from. So it's this conflict of interest that is conflict of interest reporting. I don't even know what his conflict may or may not be, but he is an attorney. He knows what the law says. He knows what his legal responsibility is as a member of the D.C. Bar. He knows what his legal responsibility is as a member of the council. There are the D.C. Code, the municipal regulations, and the council code of ethics require him to do just what I've been saying here all along. Yet he ignores it, and those who should be our watchdogs will not take him up on it. Could, of course, go through the long and tedious process of filing an official complaint with the Board of Elections Office of Campaign Finance. No one should have to do that. We've now talked, the council is now talking about ethics reform. Kwame Brown has been pushing ethics reform. Jack Evans, as I believe has said, the laws as on the books are perfectly okay. If the laws are on the books, follow them, Mr. Evans. Follow the laws that are on the books. And then we can all go on our merry way. But it's for right now, it's he continues to ignore the laws, which he swears that oath to uphold and enforce when he was later sworn in as a council member for the District of Columbia. So that's it on his situation with the... He's had other issues where people have wondered about his clients. Most notably, last year, his law firm represented Northrop Grumman. At the time he was proposing this, they didn't actually represent him, but they had a close relationship with the Bro Lot organization, which they subsequently merged with or acquired. That's a whole other issue, but
and maybe we'll touch on that. But I just wanted to point out, as someone who's reported on conflicts of interest, you covered the Maryland State House for the Washington Post in the 1970s, and you've been a reporter for years now. These words, you know, potential conflict of interest, you don't throw them around lightly.
No, I mean I read the law. When somebody recuses themselves, they are saying, out of an abundance of caution or whatever, I might have a conflict of interest or the appearance of a conflict of interest. I don't know what he has, but he's got something that he is required to disclose that he isn't disclosing. I can only suggest that he comply with this now. 2 years late, there's no, as far as I know, there's no statute of limitations on doing what a good citizen and a good council member should do and obey the law. And he's not doing that. I'm also have you, since you mentioned that I'd covered the Maryland legislature before, I'd covered conflict of interest stories. I think in Montgomery County, they would recognize this as a conflict of interest, having covered that county before. They would be all over it. I don't know why some of the press here is so leery of this, given their willingness to write about other people's ethical problems, which they should be doing. But with Councilmember Evans, I'm at a loss to explain why they aren't asking him the question, why aren't you complying with the law, and what is the extent of your appearance of a conflict of interest?
The council has been day after day, you see, not a week goes by where you don't hear of a new problem with another council member. And then Evans will be quoted, but as someone to go to as a solution to the council's ethical problems, as recently as the front page of this morning's Washington Post, says, in the past 2 years, a majority of the D.C. Council's 13 members have either faced questions about or investigations into their spending. And then you go to the jump, and it goes on to quote Evans as in explaining how he got to this situation. So somehow he goes to year after year as the solution to the problem, and his potential conflicts, which are, I mean, talk about the scale of what we're dealing with here, potentially.
Yeah, and just to remind people that the Post, not on the conflict of interest issue, I'm surprised they don't remember their own reporting from just a few weeks ago, in which they cited Jack Evans for using his constituent services fund primarily to buy sports tickets, which he then distributed to constituents, and that 5 or 6 years ago, Serge Kovaleski reported on Jack PAC, Political Action Committee, which there were issues relating to misuse of that. So there have been reports of that in the press before. But when you said about the scale of the problem, you mean
the numbers. Whereas, you know, Councilmember Harry Thomas is accused of misusing $300,000, and there's been a tremendous amount of press around that. Kwame Brown for the alleged, you know, for the SUVs. What we're talking about here is more than $200 million that is unclear whether that is going to a client of Mr. Evans through his law firm, Patton Box.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is so much bigger in its potential. I mean, as far as the conflict is concerned, I'm not, you know, going to pass judgment on the deal, which I think is a bad deal. But we're talking about $270 million in public financing here. This is it's a matter of the public trust here. And priorities for the city. When we keep talking about how we're nearing our in the cap that we for capital projects, so we're talking about something a huge amount of money is involved here compared to these other things, which, as I said before, should be investigated, should be reported, should be dealt with, and if they're guilty, they should be punished. I want. But the size of this deal just dwarfs that, which is alleged corruption that is of a much a regular kind of scale. What we're talking about with this kind of deal with the Convention Center Hotel is the crony capitalism. It's guys behind the scenes working out deals, and it's very disturbing that we the public should know when someone has a conflict of interest, especially on an issue that this council member carried through from start to almost finish. That when did his law firm begin to represent somebody, or if it is his law firm, I don't know. Maybe he has a personal. Conflict in some way, but he doesn't have a right to keep that to himself, and it's a major deal. Marriott is, as I said before, is a corporation that could build its own hotels if it chose, but the city decides to chip in a big way, it's very disturbing the amounts that are involved.
John Hanrahan, you raised questions about the deal itself, and so did Stephen Pearlstein, a Washington Post business writter, February 2010, in an article entitled Out of Control, the Sorry Saga of the Convention Center Hotel. He writes, quote, "Over the years, I've learned to cast a wary eye when government officials want an economic development project more than the private interests chosen to develop it do. Projects grow bigger and more ambitious than they need to be, thereby requiring more subsidies than they deserve, until virtually all the economic benefits wind up in the hands of private interests. Here in Washington, there is no better example of that than the Convention Center Hotel," end quote.
Yeah, I mean, I love tourists, but I don't see how this deal in any way benefits the citizens of the District of Columbia. It benefits some corporate interests. It benefits it benefits a lot of a lot of big interests, but the ordinary citizen, this benefits him not one whit.
I just also want to point out that on numerous three times testifying, I've asked Mr. Evans about whether Marriott Patton Boggs, his firm, represents Marriott. And at the groundbreaking for the Convention Center Hotel, there was a fancy affair. And I asked him, what's going on here? And he answered the first question. I asked him about whether Patton Boggs represented Marriott. He turned and walked away. And as you mentioned, the two major civic groups have, that answer is gone, that mm-hmm. question has gone unanswered. Mm-hmm. And your five letters now over the course of a year, the latest one being today, still no response.
Yeah, that's right. Other than I said Kwame Brown back in March did respond, and I'd copied a number of people on that letter. He responded saying, "Thanks, John. I'll look into it." And that's the last I've heard. So I've said, it's a matter that would take about 15 minutes to look into. This is not some sort of complicated deal. I'm not asking him to look into the $270 million financing per se. I'm saying look into the council members' failure to comply with the law. And so I'm hoping that this latest one will stir him. As I said, he copied his answer too to the various civic association, various press people that I'd sent it to also. I'm hoping that he will get him to comply, that and we as citizens have a right to know what the conflict of interests are, that we can find this out. And as I read, maybe you can correct me on this, is the legislation that Kwame Brown is the chairman is proposing would essentially entrench the secrecy. Is that correct? That it would not that it would say you'd have to declare your conflict, but only people who are in the know get to look at it to see if you have a conflict that would prohibit you from voting. Am I mischaracterizing that in some way?
That's the way I read it. That you're supposed to disclose your conflicts, but to Kwame Brown.
Yeah, and then their legal counsel and others would look at them, but the public would still be in the dark when you declare a conflict.
And for those interested, you can find John Hanrahan's latest letter to the D.C. Council today at stealalittle.com, which is put together by Rob Halligan, who's another Ward 2 resident. Yes. And stealalittle.com, he said, because when you steal a little, they throw you in jail, but when you steal a lot, they make you a king. And he's been documenting your work, bringing it to a wider audience. John, I wanted to talk about one other deal. You mentioned Northrop Grumman and the situation there. Now it ended up that taxpayer money did not go towards Northrop Grumman moving its headquarters from, I think it was California, to this area there in Falls Church, Virginia.
Yes.
But nevertheless, the situation needs to be discussed because there was a bidding war and D.C. was a part of that bidding war. Evans was leading that charge, and so it may have been to the benefit of Northrop Grumman. And this again is not a company. This is a company that that Patton Boggs had a strategic relationship. Let's explain the situation here.
Oh, well, at the time that Mr. Evans was, the news stories were saying they were going to move to Northern Virginia or suburban Maryland, and Mr. Evans jumped in and said, they should come to D.C., that this is where the Congress is and everything else is. It makes sense. And he said, I'm introducing legislation to give them a $20 million, I believe it was $20
million. I think it might have been
$25. And he said he would go higher if the other jurisdictions were offering something even sweeter.
The quote was, whatever someone else puts down, we're going to beat it.
And so he said this. I remember being out of town, coming back, saying, well, that's really peculiar, even for Jack Evans to commit the city. He's not the mayor or the chair of the council here. He is the chairman, though, of the most powerful committee. And I look and find that, lo and behold, a company called Bro Lot represents Northrop Grumman. They lobby for Northrop Grumman. Now, Bro Lot is former Congressman John Bro, former Senator Trent Lott. And it just happened that Bro Lot, at that very moment, according to the Washington Post, they didn't tie it to this, the Jack Evans thing, but was negotiating with Patton Boggs to become a part of Patton Boggs, acquired by Patton Boggs. They already had what Patton Boggs in press releases described as a strategic relationship. That is, they worked jointly on projects of mutual interest. So at this time that Jack Evans was pushing, was in the press talking about legislation filed, I believe he submitted a bill, his law firm was working with Bro Lot on a number of matters. I don't know if they're working on this particular one, but they had a definite relationship with Bro Lot, and then subsequently did acquire Bro Lot. What happened, though, was that even the Washington Post, which didn't mention that connection that I had revealed, the Washington Post even editorialized, saying, "It's this is unseemly. This is causing a bidding war. This will mean that whoever eventually gets the headquarters will have to pay more. We'll have to sweeten the deal. We'll have to give more tax breaks." And subsequently, the Northrop Grumman decided to move to Northern Virginia, which is where most people felt they were going to go anyway. But it was very troubling, of course, again, that there was this relationship. The Washington Times, I believe, did write something in an article about this, months and months after the occurrence. But again, that was one that would have benefited a client of Patton Boggs. I don't know if you have other questions on that, or if I touched everything that applied to that. But
and Northrop Grumman was one of the biggest clients of Bro Lot at the time.
Oh yeah, and I'm trying to remember. I probably have it in something I'm carrying. How much in lobbying fees? They had racked up huge lobbying fees, and of course Northrop Grumman again is. Is hardly a company that, I mean, they have millions of, I don't know what number they are in defense contractors. They make millions of billions of dollars from defense and other contracts, and yet here we were ready to the sky's the limit, said Councilman Evans. I'll be willing to outbid them. In any event, it was another example of the potential for conflict here, and as I mentioned, they're allowed to have outside employment, it's $240,000. I haven't checked this year's. It could be more. This year, it could be still $240,000. And what exactly he does at that firm for $240,000, I don't know. He's never disclosed that. Not that he's required to, but he. He says he's a full-time council member and a full-time father, and I believe that. I don't think anybody ever has said Jack Evans doesn't do his work and he's spending all his time at the law firm. But it raises the question, what does he do for the law firm if not work on behalf of or of clients or of the industry that they're involved in?
Northrop Grumman posted a 2009 profit of $1.7 billion, the Washington Post pointed out.
At that time.
And then I think it was the Post that pointed that out. But then the Post, again, Stephen Perlstein, business columnist, wrote about this deal. Virtually every credible study finds that using taxpayer subsidies to chase after corporate locations rarely pays off. For the district, which is looking at a $200 million budget shortfall next year, getting into this bidding war over Northrop Grumman is particularly loony, end quote. That was March 3rd, 2010, Washington Post.
Jeez, couldn't have put it better. That's exactly right. I mean, and people have done the studies. I'm trying to remember which organization here locally, that all these subsidies, as I said, for stadiums, for convention centers and convention center hotels, they are not a good deal for the public, but they are a good deal for the corporate interest, which, as I said, ties it all back into what's going on here, what's going on at Occupy Wall Street, what's going on all over the country, and especially in tight economic times, it's just insane.
I should mention that we're here in the media tent. They're doing mic checks outside. It was raining out earlier. You mentioned second salaries and that the DC Council defines its job as part-time, even though they make $125,000 per year.
Yeah.
So they're not prohibited from getting a second salary, as several have. Because of these questions about ethics that have been raised again and again, just about every council member has their own ethics bill put forward. Some of them, or at least Vincent Orange's, would prohibit council members from having a second salary. What do you think about that?
I personally think $125,000 is a pretty decent salary. I actually have never looked at how others around the country compare, but it's certainly not a low income bracket, and I think that's. I'm not familiar with Orange's bill in the particulars. But I think that we have to come to that point. I think he wanted to raise the salaries, I believe, didn't he, substantially, and then bar the outside employment. I believe that was it. I would be for barring the outside employment without raising the salaries, certainly. From the time that this came in, when the Home Rule Act back in 1970, early 70s, at the time, I think they didn't envision it as being, such a heavy load. And they weren't paid anywhere near this at this time. I should mention that we've had, just because I think it ties into the whole issue, some of the issues that are looked at on a national level, that we once passed a citizens' initiative here to limit campaign contributions to $50, and it passed overwhelmingly. Who on the council led the charge to overturn that? Jack Evans, who has the biggest war chest of. I'm not sure how much he's raised this time for a simple award race. Is that right? Yeah. And that there was also a term limits bill, which council members passed, which was, I believe, for two terms. The voters passed that overwhelmingly. Jack Evans and others worked to overturn that one, which they did. So I think if we had stuck to that original term limits, that even if some people would consider $125,000 as being a sacrifice on behalf of the city, they'd only have to worry about doing it for two terms. It's absurd that the democratic will of the people got thwarted on those occasions. So to answer your question again, I think yes. I think it should be declared a full-time job, and that's a salary of $125,000 is fine.
Can you talk about some of the other projects that have gone through in recent years, from the baseball stadium, which has cost $600, $700, $800+ million in taxpayer dollars?
Yeah, the stadium was especially an interesting fight. As I mentioned at the outset, it was one where people of all political persuasions, left to right and in the middle, opposed. I mean, the Washington Post, which was gung-ho for the stadium, took a poll at a very crucial juncture when council votes were coming up, found that 70% of the people opposed it. Before that, I had seen some of the Friends of the Earth and others had combined to take a poll and came up with the exact same figure. And I, the journalist in my own head, skeptical, oh, well, maybe they worded it in such a way that they got a desirable answer. Uh-uh. Now the Post took a poll. It was, the figure kept going up. Originally it was, you know, like 300 million, or no, 250 million, I think. Then it was 300, then it was 400, then it was 500, then it was 600, then it was, the opponents of the stadium, myself included, had a poster made, which we had to keep scratching things out on the poster as to what the amount of the that was going to be spent, there were overwhelming opposition to it, except from some of the usual suspects like the Board of Trade and the Chamber of Commerce, which wasn't really looking out for its own small business members, because there was going to be a tax on small businesses. Even if they weren't anywhere near the stadium. But it was study after study has shown that stadiums are not good, as they say, engines of economic development. They do not cause other, you know, spin-off benefits that the proponents of public financing state. At the time this fight was going on, I believe it was San Francisco was building a stadium. There, the other than I'm sure with some infrastructure stuff, the team owner was footing the bill for that. People made the argument that this was not a good deal for the citizens and the taxpayers. Jack Evans and other advocates sort of treated it as if it were, well, this is just sort of free money when you are. When public money goes to finance a stadium, and it'll all pay off. I'm sure baseball fans are very pleased with the stadium.
The team was doing
better. I follow baseball, and they were doing better. But that was never the point. That we knew they could build a stadium. It wasn't like, oh, it's impossible to build it, but they'd always tout this as if this were some great achievement, like they just built the pyramid or something. The spin-off benefits are not. You probably know more about the problem with Harry Thomas and the ethics. Doesn't that relate to money that was supposed to go into some community benefit fund? The whole thing was sold that the community was really going to benefit from this. And I still remember, I should mention, my wife Debbie, who was here, that got arrested in Union Station holding up one of these baseball signs, the anti-stadium financing signs at a baseball support meeting where the team was announcing its logo and its and the name of the team. And subsequently, of course, after she was given a stay-away order, she was just, from Union Station, the charges were dropped, filed a lawsuit against the Amtrak police with the goal, which we carried through, that it produced a six-figure settlement. Except for our expenses, all of that was donated to the National Lawyers Guild and to the, I'm trying to remember the name of... the organization that counsels young men and women who are in the military and who become conscientious objectors. I'm sorry, I don't remember that. I should. It's a great locally based organization. But I was digressing on that, but it showed that at the time, at the hearing, I still remember that they had in there, when the council... those who favored it wanted more benefits for the council members, as you know, more box seats, more suites, and I totaled up the numbers. And at the time, they were also stating that this deal they negotiated with Major League Baseball was also going to provide tickets for kids and for disadvantaged kids. and I totaled up the number of seats for the disadvantaged kids was far less than what it was going to be for the advantaged kids, namely the council members and the and their, you know, whoever they might invite as guests. There were many more seats, and better seats too, I might add. So it was a terrible deal for the city. The Nation had an article recently about one of by somebody who had been who had been an advisor to Major League Baseball before, and he was talking about negotiating deals. He didn't talk about the DC one, but he talked about another one where he told them, when they said, well, we're going to ask the city for this, he said, oh no, they'll never give you that. And he said, well, let's just throw it in there anyway. And whichever city this was did give them the deal. The current deal with Major League Baseball has the what we all call the keeping up with the Joneses clause. If any other statement is built to a higher degree, higher quality than ours, they can upgrade the stadium and bill us for the tab. I said, I wonder if they've noted that Yankee Stadium has a much better and bigger scoreboard than we do. They should, I don't want to give them advice, but I wouldn't be surprised they would come in demanding a better, yes, I know. Yeah, giving them tips here. No, so it's overall just a terrible advice. There are some people who are more up to on the exact details of it, but it was an awful deal. And there were a couple of council members who, four council members actually voted against it ultimately, but the rest, three of them who had said during a campaign will vote against public financing, they flipped around, and the citizens lost. Yeah.
John Hanrahan, as we talk about these various deals with not an insubstantial amount of money, also talk about poverty in the District of Columbia. I remember after the census came out, it stated that there's 43% of African-American children are living in poverty here in D.C. So as hundreds of millions of dollars are going to these large-scale projects of questionable benefit to the district, it's not that there are not very real needs that are not going unmet.
Yeah, no, I mean, yes, absolutely. I mean, the official poverty rate, you know, adults and children, I think it's, up around 30% in the city. Maybe a little less, but for children, it's more than a third of children in the city live in poverty. And of course, these are not the and then the talk of all the cutbacks that, you know, that we have to endure. And our Ward 2 council member is usually the one who talks about that. There were two profligate with spending, particularly on education. He's always a big one for saying we're spending too much on education in the District of Columbia. We've got to cut that back. So, but then programs that would benefit people living in poverty are cut back, and the contrast is just so stark, and even on the bread and circuses aspect of it. I mean, most people living in poverty, other than these little crumbs that they might allow 100 kids a game or something to go to, there's no way they benefit from any of these big boondoggles downtown. And it's shocking that our priorities in the city are just so screwed up. And you know, the poor have got to suffer more, and this is, you know, we're in a city and an area which has been hit less than any other in the country by the recession at the middle and upper levels. But for poor people, this is a very difficult city to survive in.
Lastly, John, these Occupy occupations that are happening around the country, one of the chances, you know, we are the 99%, and one of the rallying cries is about the corporate influence on government. And here you have one of the leading elected officials, Jack Evans, who is literally on the payroll of one of the largest law and lobby firms. And so throughout the country, you're seeing these occupations about, you know, limiting corporate influence and not eviscerating the safety net. So your final thoughts as we talk here about this movement also that has spawned all over the country and throughout the world.
Yeah, I mean, it really, there, I mean, it's so exciting. I mean, what's going on? I mean, I'm sure I was one of those people who said, you know, why, where's the outrage? And I don't even mean, I mean, I knew the outrage is there. I've covered a lot of this stuff. I knew that it was happening, but the press often, usually, wasn't reporting on it, or would report on it as, oh, it's the same. It's the usual suspects, you know. It's the same groups. These people don't really represent anybody. So it's very heartening. I'm probably straying off your question here. My 73-year-old brain is rattled. But ask me again. But
I was asking. It was a bad question. I was asking both about you know, Evans being directly on the payroll, but also these occupations, which are really about, you know, the corporate influence on government, which he represents.
Yeah, I mean, this is all about corporate influence here in the District of Columbia, and it's Evans is emblematic of that. I mean, the corporations are just too much involved in local government. They're too much involved in state government. They're too much involved in. And the federal government, obviously, we just do not recognize this enough. I mean, here in D.C., the corporate handouts are just enormous. One project after another that have been aided over the years. I think that people are definitely around the country. Have woken up, are waking up, and that this might be the beginning of something really good. I in the District of Columbia, we still kowtow to the corporations, and with very few populist voices raised on the council, if ever, and it's. I'm very hopeful for the first time in a long time, and the focus is on, with the focus on Wall Street, with the focus on the corporations, the corporate dominance, I'm glad that in this particular place where we're sitting, where their focus is on ending the wars, these costly both in terms of lives and in wrecking other countries, I'm sort of babbling right here at the moment. It's such a an issue that I hope comes more to the fore as these demonstrations proceed. Sorry, I gave a very incoherent answer there.
That was excellent. And thanks for your time, John Hanrahan, and thanks to October2011.org and Occupy DC here at Liberty Plaza. At Freedom Plaza, Liberty Plaza is up in New York, and this whole thing will be posted at thefightback.org. Thanks.